content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host and producer for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the Triangle Radio Reading Service Studio. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics, try to champion your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in your community so that you can achieve your goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies as well as nonprofit organizations that promote information on law supporting independent living. And speaking of nonprofit organizations that promote information and law supporting independent living, our guest today is Holly Stiles. Holly, we're so glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Holly is an attorney with Disability Rights North Carolina, a wonderful organization that has offices here in Raleigh. Today, we're going to focus on collegiate rights. It's our back-to-school edition, and we're going to be talking about accommodations in higher education. Before we get into that, Holly, you are returning to us. You've been our guest in the past, but remind our listeners a little bit about your background and what you do.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me again. So I'm an attorney with Disability Rights North Carolina. Been there for 9 years, and we have a variety of different things attorneys and advocates focus on, but my particular focus is on equal access to the community. So we handle employment discrimination matters, forced titles one, two, and three of the ADA, which is equal access to public programs, benefits, services, and private businesses open to the public. And we also help people sometimes that have a guardian and want to become their own guardian again, restore their competencies. So that's what my team works on, but there are lots of other folks that I work with doing a variety of things, and definitely encourage folks to look at our website, www.disabilityrightsnc.org, to see all the different services we offer.
Well, it's a wonderful organization, and you're a real veteran there. And I will tell you that one of your friends, Derek Dittmer, was a guest of ours of the last, in fact, we had him on 2 segments in a row. So anyway, he speaks very highly of you. And of course, he's a rising third-year student at the Campbell Law School. And as I said, this is our back-to-school edition. So we're going to be talking about accommodations and academic adjustments and other issues that come up with higher education. Holly, tell us a little bit about the issues that are encountered in higher education by people with impairments and disabilities.
So one of the hardest adjustments, I think, for students and their families is that when you go to college, whether it's community college, four-year school, I mean, any sort of after K through 12 education, the laws change. And so in K through 12, most parents and students are used to dealing with the Individuals with Disabilities and Education Act, the IDEA. The school has an IEP, an Individual Education Plan, and the school is the one who initiates renewing that plan. The school is the one that is required to identify students with disabilities. All of the legal obligations are weighted towards the school. But when you go to college, all of a sudden the legal obligations shift to the student. And that can be really hard, because I think back to when I was in college and I didn't want to ask anyone for help, and I didn't want to identify myself as a person with a disability. I wanted to be just another student on campus. And so I think that's the hardest thing for most students, is being the person responsible for saying, I need help, and being able to explain what that is, and being able to find the right people on campus to ask that question of, like, how can I get more time on tests? How can I get accommodations in the dorm? And it's particularly challenging for students to do all of that on their own, and for their parents maybe not to be involved in it, because they're adults now, right? They're 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So their parents don't have a right to participate the way they did in K through 12. So a lot of changes in terms of being the person who's now has the responsibility to ask for accommodations.
Right. So you've got the transition from high school to college, which is hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got the transition from an environment where somebody is looking out for you, which mm-hmm. is the school, because they've got a legal duty. But now you've entered into an institution, even if it's a state institution, where you, as the student, have to reach out and start taking care of yourself.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then there is the issue of turning 18. What about FERPA? You talked about the student having to take care of himself or herself and the parents going to the background. Does FERPA come into play here?
Similar law to HIPAA, which mm-hmm. is the idea that your educational records are private and can't be disclosed. And so sort of like with a healthcare provider where you'd have to sign a release of information for the healthcare provider to share your medical information with someone else, FERPA has the same requirement for a student that you would have to sign a release allowing someone else to have information about your educational record and matters pertaining to your education. And so like a healthcare provider, you could sign a release, and that release would permit your parent to be a part of your accommodations and your disability access. You know, a lot of colleges want the student to be the one who they're communicating directly with, and rightly so, because this is all practice for independence and adulthood. But I don't want to mislead anyone if they really need a parent support and they need that sort of backup. Then, yeah, they can sign a FERPA release and their parent can participate. Nothing about us without us sort of a mentality that hopefully the student would remain the primary source of interaction with the school. But
right. So Disability Rights North Carolina has got a paper on, and mm-hmm. it's entitled Your Rights in College.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that, and it really lays out the issues in a very logical way. And tell our audience about that paper, about how they can get a copy of the paper. And just you make your point of entry wherever you think is best, because I've read the paper. It's excellent.
Well, thank you very much. We put a lot of effort and time into trying to both simplify and cover all the topics that might come up. So if you go to our website, which is www.disabilityrightsnc.org, then on that website you would be able to, under our self-advocacy resources, search for Your Rights in College. You can also select by area of topic, and there's education is one of our topics. So there's a variety of ways to find this self-advocacy information on our website. You can also always call us, and we're happy to send people copies of the information, but going to our website is going to be a little faster and more direct. But this is I think it's about 9 pages long. The first few pages cover the rights of individuals in school and how to request accommodations, has some examples of the accommodations that might be offered. And then it gets sort of into the nuts and bolts. There's a college checklist on page 7, and that checklist talks about what to start thinking about your sophomore year of high school, even going back that far, what to do your junior year when you go to the college on visit, your senior year once you get there. It really walks you through every step of it. And that's also part of preparing people for that transition, the school IEP process, where they're reaching out to you about disability issues and accommodations and helping somebody make that transition to reaching out to the school about those accommodations. But, you know, I'm a little biased. I wrote it, so I think it's pretty good and helpful. It's, again, an overview, so it doesn't cover every issue. And if there's an issue in there that's not covered and you need more information, that's when we ask people to feel free to call our office and explain the issue they're having, and perhaps we can give a little bit more targeted information. But it's a really great overview, and it really helps you start thinking about what do I need to be aware of, what are my rights when I'm at a college or university.
So I broke it down into 3 parts, and enrollment, and then accessibility, and then accommodation/academic adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Could you address those issues for us and talk a little bit about what our audience might have to confront?
Sure. So the enrollment process, essentially the idea of which college am I going to go to and how do I pick, that's something that we encourage people to start early if you think you're going to go to college. You want to put college as the goal in the IEP starting after age 14 because, again, remember in K through 12, the school has obligation to you based on what you say your future goals are. And by the time you're 16, if you have an IEP, and if you're a student who has a disability but doesn't have an IEP, this may or may not apply to you. But then the school is supposed to start actively helping get services in place, start helping people think about what kind of assistive technology they might need when they go to school. There's all kinds of different things they can start thinking about at 16 and start planning. And one of the things that we recommend highly is to start the vocational rehabilitation process at 16 or 17. Do not wait until it is the senior year, until it's the summer after the senior year has ended, to start the VR process. Vocational rehabilitation, and since a lot of your listeners may have a visual impairment, they might go through Division of Services for the Blind for the VR program, can help pay for college. So that is a really, really valuable resource that we don't want people to not take advantage of, because the hardest thing for students right now is coming out of school with a lot of debt. And so having some of that cost taken care of is a huge, huge advantage for people with disabilities coming out of college. And then when you're in that process of selecting a college, you know, when you go on the college tours, ask the tour guide, where's the disability services office? Try to find out if the student with disabilities. Find out if the college has been sued for accommodation issues. You know, all of these things are going to be really important to your success in school. So that's what we think about in the enrollment process, is doing a lot of research, reaching out to the disability services office at the school, and really doing your Google homework, trying to find out what people have said about going to that school. And so there's a lot of advanced prep work that you can do during the enrollment process to hopefully minimize the problems you have once you might be on campus.
So we get enrolled. In the enrollment process, we're going to learn about the campus, and of course, and so we'll have a heads up about accessibility issues. But what about accessibility issues once we get to school and we've got to navigate across the campus?
Right. So once you're there, that's when you're going to be in that direct relationship with the Disability Services Office. And depending on the school you're at, it might be a person who wears multiple hats and has multiple job responsibilities, or it might be an entire office. So that's part of that process, is finding out how many people are there to help. But like your IEP, there's going to be different things that the school is going to agree or not agree to do to assist you with your disability during class, during the dorm, wherever it may be. And so it's your obligation to say what you need. And a lot of students say, well, I'm not going to ask for all the accommodations I need right away. I can always add those later. And our advice is always, always, always get all the accommodations you need and then don't use them if you don't need them. But it is so much harder to add them when you already have a bad grade, when your work is getting, you've got more reading to catch up on than you can catch up on in a week. You don't want to get behind. So it's better to just go ahead and start off strong, ask for all the accommodations you need. And part of that process is also making sure you've got all your documentation ready. Because, for example, if you have reading-related disabilities and you need a screen reader or you need JAWS or you need any sort of other assistance, you have to be ready to document that. And so, again, that's all part of that prep work. But it's going to be vitally important on campus to be able to prove that these are accommodations you need.
One thing I want to come back to is emotional support animals, which that's a whole nother area, but service animals on campus. I'm sure that there are rules and policies against having animals on campus, but suppose you have a service animal. Talk about getting the service animal access to classrooms and other facilities that you're going to use as a student.
So So service animals should be included in an accommodation plan, just like more time on test, just like extended time to complete assignments, priority seating, all those types of accommodations that someone might have. A service animal, if there needs to be any changes made, should be included in that accommodation plan. To be honest with you, most of the time, I think we've gotten to the place most of the time where it may not even be in the accommodation plan, because everyone recognizes that if you have a service animal, the service animal is going to be with you and be a part of your college life. But there's certainly no harm in clarifying that the service animal will have access to the dorm, that the service animal will be permitted in classrooms. If you're taking biology or some sort of other types of science, you may have to think through, are you going to be dealing with live animals? Are there going to be human subjects, that sort of thing? And what's the plan for that? Doesn't mean the service animal will be excluded, but it just means you may have to think through the steps of how to include the service animal. But you mentioned comfort animals, emotional support animals. They have a variety of names. And college dorms are like any housing. They're like an apartment. Now, colleges are slowly coming around to this idea because they don't see themselves as landlords, but they are. You pay rent, you have a room, and if you're late, you get kicked out. It's like a landlord situation. And so because of that, the Fair Housing Act applies, which is broader than the Americans with Disabilities Act in terms of what is recognized as an animal-related accommodation. And so, yeah, there's case law now, and there's good support in North Carolina through the Fair Housing Project and other agencies for the fact that people with disabilities can have emotional support, comfort, therapy animals in their dorm rooms. It's an animal that assists with the symptoms of their disability. So there is a broadening awareness of animals on campus, for sure.
I like the idea of working the service animal into the program in a programmatic way with the disabilities office. I think that in public accommodations, going to the grocery store, going to restaurants, people are getting more accustomed to people coming in with service animals, and so they know there's a limited number of questions that get asked. And so there may be a sense of quietude about bringing a service animal into the classroom, but would you recommend that that be something that the student bring up with disability services in advance?
Oh, absolutely. Even though it's a recognized right, and even though it shouldn't be an issue, definitely think you don't want to have any surprises. That's the worst, is when you show up and assert your right to access and they're not prepared for whatever reason to grant access. And then now you've got to fight with the school, or you've got to argue with the school over whether or not you'll be able to have your service animal, when really what you should be focusing on is your first day of class and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, having that kind of a conversation with the school, I think, is helpful. I would also just put in a plug on our website. We have some additional resources. We have a service animal video, and it's about, I think it's about 5 minutes long. It's a fast 5 minutes, I promise. I was surprised by how quickly it went by. And it's aimed at business owners and helping business owners understand the rights of individuals to access businesses with service animals. So that can be a really helpful kind of tool for people who are being denied access. And we also have animals and housing fact sheets on our website. So if somebody is trying to gain access with an emotional support animal or service animal in their campus housing, that information would be very helpful for them.
Tell our audience about compensatory education. That was a topic that was new to me in your paper, and that looks like a very aspect of higher education.
So compensatory education is for students who did not get the education that they should have gotten in K-12. And these are students who have an IEP, have a special education plan. And so compensatory education is essentially an attempt to fill in the education they may have been denied. So this came about, probably going to get it wrong, but it was, you know, maybe 20, 30 years ago, there was a lawsuit against the state of North Carolina for not educating people with disabilities the way that they're entitled to under the law. And so compensatory education was adopted as a way, again, to just kind of make up for those deprivations. So if you go to a community college, they will offer additional reading, writing, some kind of basic education. There have been some changes in that realm where community colleges also have the obligation to show that somebody is making progress. So if somebody is receiving assistance with reading or writing, typically it's going to be part of like a GED program, and they have to make progress towards getting the GED or towards getting meeting those educational milestones. But the idea is that we're trying to make up for not giving someone the education they were guaranteed under federal law.
Okay. So matriculated, we're starting classes, maybe we need some help. There is an excellent sample letter in your paper for academic adjustment. Tell us about academic adjustments and your duty, I guess, your obligation to come forward and tell somebody about that.
Yeah. So if you've been clear about what you need, you have the documentation to support it, and there's a disagreement between you and the school over which accommodations, and in the school context, they often get called academic adjustments, which is an accommodation, then perhaps you need to follow up on that, do some additional advocacy. And that's what that letter is aimed at. It's aimed at explaining, I'm a student with a disability, I have rights under these federal laws, and it's designed to help you explain to the school a little bit more clearly, perhaps where there's been this disagreement, this communication breakdown. So the idea is documentation, and a lot of people contact us and they tell us, I've had this disagreement with the school, and so we say, well, have you put it in writing? And it's just a funny little thing about the legal world, and you're an attorney, so you know this as well, that if you put something on paper, all of a sudden it becomes so valuable evidence of what has happened. And so that letter is just designed to help people have proof that I've told them that there's an issue, I've asked them to fix it, the day that you sent it, to whom you gave it to, so that the school can't come back later and say, well, we didn't know. We were not aware of this issue.
Well, it's a well-known legal rule that if it's not in writing, it didn't happen.
Right.
So your form is excellent, and you've also got the college checklist at the end of the paper. So we're talking about propitious beginnings and things rolling along. At some point, there may be some disputes. And so tell our audience, where do you go if there, besides calling up Disability Rights North Carolina, where do you go to get relief and remedy from wrongs or perceived wrongs?
So there's a couple of avenues. One avenue is that the school itself may have procedures. So it's always helpful to do a little research on the school policies, student policies. They may have some sort of a grievance procedure, escalation procedure. They may have an equal opportunity office. There may be an on-campus resource. In addition, students can complain to the Office for Civil Rights at the Federal Department of Education. They have a free grievance procedure, complaint procedure, where they'll investigate allegations of discrimination on campus and will resolve it. I would note that they have been rolling back some of their guidance documents, and so we don't know at this point how robust those investigations are and how many cases they're taking, all those sorts of things. We appreciate that there's been some changes at the department, and we acknowledge that. But in the past, they've been a great resource for students. And if a student's having a dorm-related issue, remember that's a fair housing issue, then that student might also be able to seek assistance from the North Carolina Fair Housing Project or the North Carolina Human Relations Commission, which is the local state affiliate of HUD, Housing and Urban Development. So there's a couple of different places for folks to go to try to remedy these situations without having to file a big lawsuit or get distracted from what's really important, which is their education.
Right. How about the Department of Justice? Your paper, I myself am a little bit confused. You would go to the Office of Civil Rights or when you would go to the Department of Justice. What is the difference in the dispute?
So the Department of Justice is sort of an umbrella grievance procedure where I can complain to the Department of Justice about a variety of things, not just education. Whereas the Department of Education is very specifically focused on education. So you're absolutely right. They can go to both, and thank you for reminding me that the Department of Justice is another avenue. So either or is appropriate. It just really kind of depends on one you prefer.
Okay. So we have covered a lot of ground here, Holly. Anything that you think we need to convey to our audience sort of in wrap up or to supplement what you've already, the great information that you've given us?
I think maybe my takeaway from assisting students with disabilities on campus and assisting their parents and all those different conversations I've had is, you know, it really comes down to preparation, and I can't stress enough how important it is to do that background research, because I find so many students who pick a college, they're excited to go to college, and they get there and they don't have documentation, or they don't know exactly what accommodations they need, or they turn down accommodations that would be helpful. I mean, there's just a variety of things that can come up along the way, but the most important thing is choosing the right campus. Because if you choose a campus that is not the right campus for you, it's going to be really hard to overcome that.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard. And so some schools are really great at certain types of accommodations, other schools are not. That's my advice, is pick carefully.
Good advice. Good information, good counsel. Thank you so much, Holly. We've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Please be sure to tune in next time on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m. And we rebroadcast the following Wednesday at 7 a.m. We hope you've enjoyed the show and discovered information about your legal rights for obtaining equal access and full participation in your community. I'm Joe Austin, your host. Holly Stiles from Disability Rights North Carolina, thank you so much again for joining us and giving us a wonderful program. Come again.
Thank you.
The content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can readily find it as a podcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org, where you'll be able to listen to it again and share it with others. If you have any comments or questions from today's episode or wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. You may also reach us via email at info@trrsnc.org. We look forward to hearing from you, and we will be back next month. And thanks again, Holly.